go on. We would continue with the presentation of Gunther Deschner and Sachin Prabhu from Red Hat. And yes, it's your turn.
All right. You can hear me? Yeah, mic's working. Yeah, so my name is Gunther. This is my colleague Sachin Prabhu. We are both working, on Samba, obviously. I'm a Samba team member for a long time and yeah, worked in all other kind of whatever branches inside of Red Hat on Samba-related matters. Sachin was maintaining the kernel SIFS client for a long time at Red Hat, is now joining our team, and we're working both on looking at implementing SMB3 features for our specific cluster solution that we are going to talk about a little bit. So we have a product called ArchGS, which we will briefly outline a little bit. That's a combination of Samba's HTTP and a clustered file system. So we want to just highlight a little bit about that and then come to the main topic of the talk, which is the problems and the obstacles of implementing SMB multi-channel in such a scenario. We have been looking at this for quite some time in Samba, but now we've seen a lot of customer demands that people want to see this feature finally be completed, and so we're finally coming back and hoping to do that. In particular, there are three main areas which we need to spend some work on. First is this op-lock and lease break failure scenarios, which we'll then also be able to show a demo of an early implementation of an important feature which is really required to make this feature complete. Then we'll also talk a little about the complexity of testing multi-channel in the way that we develop Samba and the way that we need to test this feature to be able to roll it out then in the future. And then as a third main topic, we will talk about the complexity and difficulties of doing IP failover with setups with Samba, HTTP, and multi-channel. So if you have any questions also, just ask them whenever you like. So the product that we both are a team of and we are both helping out and looking at the Samba-related topics is called Red Hat Cluster Storage. So the marketing slides say it's a Red Hat Cluster Storage provides an open software-defined storage solution across physical, virtual, and cloud resources and so forth. I guess it's not really required to explore all these aspects. But really, for our purpose, it's basically really an SMB storage on top of ClusterFS, which is a clustered file system. Cluster is an open source product completely. Samba is open source. And the clustering component which we use is obviously also related to Samba at HTTP. We not only use it for maintaining the databases that Samba needs to operate correctly on all the storage nodes, but also for the HA aspect. So high availability and IP management, all these sorts of things is completely dealt or controlled by HTTP. So we're heavily dependent on that. The only real addition that we have in order to integrate better with ClusterFS itself is that we have a VFS module, which is loaded then on Samba shares, which then expose or basically access the storage of cluster using some native methods, using a library called libgf API, which is then loaded, and all the I/O is then handled using this VFS module. This is our kind of classic configuration, but there also is a Fuse client for cluster available, which allows to basically mount a cluster as a local file system, and that could also then be exported, and for some scenarios that's even a good alternative setup. But in standard setups and standard configurations in the documentation, you will always find the use of this VFS ClusterFS module. That's kind of the default setup. So ArchGS as a product is currently released with version 3.3.1. And this is providing a rather recent version of Samba 4.7.3, offering this set of SMB3 features which are implemented in upstream. So it's also that we support this protocol dialect by default on the network. So people will use things like the specific encryption pieces and so forth, all that stuff that is properly and completely implemented. The SMB multi-channel capability is also kind of announced by the product. But it's really only supported at a tech preview level, which means it's basically just an experimental feature as in upstream. So we don't have any distinction in that. We just have some pieces of documentation where we outline specific pitfalls that you need to look at when you are testing the feature. So multi-channel. There have been in the past many presentations about multi-channel and about the implementation in Samba, mostly done by my colleague Michael Adam, who unfortunately also can't be here this year. Among with all my other Indian colleagues or our Indian colleagues, which didn't unfortunately got their visa in time, so they couldn't really give their talks here. Michael Adam, yeah, he whatever for a whole series of Sandbox P conferences and also at STC, he always gave an update about the specifics of our multi-channel implementation. So I'm not going into very big detail here, just really a brief reminder about these things which are important for us. So multi-channel is a very important performance and reliability feature, came with Windows 2012 and is activated when the client and the server support the protocol version 3. It's mainly really used, or its biggest capability is probably to maximize the throughput on the network by doing different things. It's in core, it's aggregating TCP transports together and allowing to aggregate multiple transport connections into just one session for the client to use, so that it can maximize the throughput. It does that by either using multiple network interfaces, then using also additional technologies like NIC teaming or RDMA. There have been many good talks about RDMA already here, so we don't need to. I'm not going to big detail in that, but also even if you just have a single NIC, you can benefit from multi-channel. Even also sometimes if you have support for receiver for RSS, the receive side scaling, which allows the network interface to offload the processing of the I/O over multiple cores of your CPU. If you have a capability for that, then you can also have multiple channels just over one network interface. So maximizing the throughput is one big feature, but also by having multiple transport connections, it of course increases the fault tolerance, because if there is one issue with one transport connection, then the overall communication can just compensate that by just using the remaining channels or by building up new channels. And also a big advantage and a big benefit that's not been highlighted so much in the work that we've been doing so far for our own implementation is the automatic configuration. The fact that just you don't ever really need to enable it or set up individual interfaces and group things together or something like that. In a pure Windows environment, you would just have an SMB3 server supporting multi-channel. And if the client is supporting it as well, the feature will be automatically and transparently enabled and used without any interaction from the client. So there's just a whole bunch of commands and utilities that you can actually use in order to tweak it or to enable or disable it. But for just using it, you basically don't need to do anything. Yeah, just give some brief example. This is, for example, a single NIC with this receive side scaling capability. Assign a client and a server, and you will see that they will be able to aggregate four 10 gigabit Ethernet connections just over one network interface very easily, and use this for multi-channel setup. This is an example of using multiple NICs, just two interfaces, which is kind of the most common scenario, I guess, for using it. And if you look at the Microsoft documentation, I actually took this overview from their documentation. You will see that the more technologies you bring into the picture, in particular with RDMA, the stronger, of course, the benefit and the throughput will be. And so this is just an overview slide. So what about our own implementation in Samba? So we looked at it basically already with the very early prototypes of Windows 2012, started implementing the whole set of features and technologies that we needed to have for it. And since the release of Samba 4.4 in 2016, we are able to provide that capability by just setting a smb.conf parameter called server multi-channel support equals yes. It's of course still switched off, so it's set to no. You have to enable it in order to use it. And the way that we have implemented it is was a bit difficult. We need to architect some things differently, because normally when a connection is coming in from a client to the main Samba process, the SMBD process, we then fork off children for each connection to deal with the I.O. For that particular connection. Now, with having multiple connections relating to one session, we needed to make sure that they all end up in one process. And for this to happen, we were using a technology called FD parsing, which allows us to pass the file descriptor on the network to that specific daemon on the same machine, so that then one machine can deal with multiple connections at the same time, and we don't have to deal with the complexity of synchronizing multiple processes. So this is just a requirement we needed to work on in order to provide the feature at all. So I said it's still an experimental feature. It's turned off by default still. Mainly really because these three scenarios which I've mentioned earlier, which are really some serious issues which we just can't ignore easily, and which I will outline now in the next slides a bit more. First of all, as mentioned, the op-lock and lease break, they are not multi-channel aware. They have no idea, have no notion of channels or retry on different channels. That's a major issue. Then, of course, the whole Samba development is very, very strongly test-driven, and everything really must be tested, in particular in these really very delicate areas. We definitely need to have an automated way of testing this feature. So we look into that. And then finally, as mentioned, the relationship with IP failover and IP management, which is then controlled by C3DB. So op-lock and lease break. Yeah, I'm not going to explain what op-locks and leases are to a big extent. Just very, very briefly, in many scenarios, the server just needs to talk back to the client in order to inform him that there has been a change in whatever in op-locks or in the lease state, and that the client needs to react appropriately. So when this event occurs, the server is really supposed to talk back to the client and lets the client do something. And in a simple setup where you just have one client and one server, there's no really big magic. The connection is just going back and forth over this transport connection. And this is, if there's a failure in that, then whatever the reactions on both sides are pretty much defined and clear. What is then supposed to happen on the protocol level. But if you have a multi-channel setup, multiple transport connections, you have to suddenly really deal with the failure of just a specific connection. So first of all, you have to understand, or you have to basically research which connection is really used for this back-channel connection, and what is really the issue if one channel is failing. So this would be a kind of a very simple multi-NIC setup with multi-channel. And if there's just one channel failure, then it's still quite easy. Of course, the connection and the communication just will then use the remaining channel. But things just may look very, very different and way more complex in real-world setups. And so we had a lot of questions about these things. And we were looking at various I.O. lab conferences, I.O. lab events, which we were attending after the STC conferences in 2016, 2017. I was just with my colleague, Jose, at the time. We were focusing on creating basically a test suite, which allows us to explore on all these aspects a little more. And most of this work has been taken over by my colleague Sachin now, and he has been looking into that stuff and cleaning it up a little bit. And he will describe a little bit more.
Yeah, so we started off by writing SMB torture test scripts. This was tested against Windows 2016 server. We use IP tables to simulate outages in the link. And we tested for both op-lock breaks and lease breaks. While doing these tests, we noticed a difference in behavior on the Windows server. For example, for op-lock breaks, the op-lock break is sent through the last created channel, Whereas when a lease break or lease revocation is sent, it's sent through the first created channel. Op block breaks, there are no retries attempted, whereas for lease breaks, a retry is attempted. Yeah, these are properties which Gunther discovered while his test when he was testing. It starts retrying 10 times after inactivities of 10 seconds each with a 1 second interval. So, at the moment, the current edition of Soundbite doesn't actually deal with the op-lock break or lease break retries in multi-channels, where it attempts to then retry these breaks over a second channel. Once it discovers it cannot, it doesn't receive an ACK from the client. What we have is a prototype right now, which we are going to demonstrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, this is an SMB torture script which I had run. First, we run the failure scenario against the existing SMB server. So here there are two sessions which are opened. Session two is then divided into, or it has three distinct multi-channel, three distinct channels. We open a file, we open two files with the second session, and then we use the first session to open the file to trigger an op lock or a lease break in this case. So here we have the client is now waiting. So there is the first channel has been dropped. The client waits for the server tries to send an op lock break to the client, but because IP tables restricts it from sending data, it waits for about 30 seconds and eventually giving up, and the first session is allowed to carry on with the operations. The second session has no idea that the op lock has been, or the lease has been revoked. And this is the prototype we have. The same way we have a lease revocation being sent to the client. So at this moment, it waits for about 30 seconds or op lock break timeout in the Samba server. Before it then retries on the second channel, it marks the first channel as failed at that point.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
So there, it receives the break. Yeah. And then we continue with the other files just to make sure it's working. And that's it. That was the success scenario.
Yeah. Oh, no. All right. Yeah, you want to comment on the to-do items? I mean, this is just a very early prototype.
So this is an early prototype. We don't yet clear up the disconnected or failed channels yet. We need to check out on whatever TCP settings we can do to help with this. And on Windows, op-lock breaks are never retried. Maybe it's just a different code path which is not connected to the lease break. So we need to find out. We need to talk to Microsoft about it.
Yeah, also initially we had the idea, or Metze was actually proposing, that we should use the counters which exist on the Linux kernel and keep around two queues in order to compare, to identify whether these packages which we are supposed to have sent out have been received or not. And we were doing some experiments with these counters and doing calculations in order to make decisions whether we can safely assume that a packet has been delivered and stuff like that. But from discussions that we just had in the past days, this is way not a reliable method, because there could be some just parties in between the real client who is supposed to receive these things. So we need to come up with a way more robust solution for that. Yeah, Jeremy.
So you're talking about WAN accelerators there, or people who lie about TCP sequence numbers, or what?
Things like that, whatever kind of network devices which could be in between us and the client, which could then just have accepted the packet and stuff like that. So it's just way not reliable
use
that.
So you can tell that it's exited the server, but that's about as far as you can get, right?
Okay. So talking a little bit about the testing aspect, as I mentioned, it's really very important for us to have tests for these crucial parts of the protocol. Every commit really has to run and to survive our really massive test suite, which is kind of spending 3 hours on exploring all aspects of the protocols involved. And for testing these things in a fashion automatically unintended somewhere on the internet, we have a whole set of library which have been working on in the past for a long time, which have been made even nicely wrapped up and made available for other projects under the umbrella of the Zebra project. Andreas gave a talk about this, I believe, last year or years before. And this whole wrapping library set consists of a whole bunch of packages for all kind of purposes. It can abstract net NSS interfaces, UID interfaces, DNS interfaces, even PAM. But first of all, it abstracts really the socket handling, the entire socket layer, in a fashion that we can safely test and set up services and servers and do all kind of nasty things with IP addresses without really interfering with the real host sockets on the machine that we are running. So if you hear about these things, you are really wondering, okay, why not use containers and whatever, set up your stuff and then throw away the container afterwards. It's just these technologies have been really so old and been around for such a long time, way before containers really became such an easy, accessible thing for test-driven development. So we're still stuck with using our libraries to a big success also. But whenever we explore some areas of interfaces which are not implemented, then of course we need to first look into that. And in this case now, with Socket Wrapper, we also need a way to do this FD parsing in an abstracted fashion. So right now this is just not available. And for the testing which has been done for the initial implementation of multi-channel in Samba, there has been a very simple hack being used that basically avoids socket wrapper for the FD parsing. So the FD parsing is really fully exposed to the local operating system then while running these tests. And of course, this can't be the case for all the time. So FD parsing must come to socket wrapper. And in the past month, there has been made some good progress on that, mostly done by our colleagues Anoop, Andreas, and Michael, who were basically first working on items which are prerequisites in order to come up with FD parsing implementation for Socket Wrapper. First, it needed to be made thread safe. Then there was a... So thread safeness was supposed to be done, but apparently there are still issues with that. And Anoop just told me that he has been proposing a different set for this particular issue Amitay is mentioning. There has been added a memory map file for to be shared among the processes, and these things have been protected with pthread robust mutexes. But the real core piece, the FD parsing, is still a little bit under construction and being worked on. What to do is pretty much clear. We're not going to do all details here, but this is something we need to continue working on. But luckily, we have got support from Andreas and other people here. Testing's ongoing, but then finally, the big thing that we still have to really identify is the relationship between CTDB and IPs which are managed by CTDB and multi-channel IP addresses, these sorts of things. So if you look at a typical CTDB setup, you will most of the time have multiple IP addresses in your cluster that will just be nicely spread out over all your nodes. And if there is an issue with one IP address, CTDB might on its own decide to move that IP address to another node and host it there and let it be used by clients. Or even by management purposes, somebody could move IPs around in the cluster and put them on different nodes. So this is what basically this typical CTDB operation will look like in a real-world scenario. If you now consider that an SMBD daemon would consume multiple interfaces on one node, And you keep in back of your mind this mechanism that we have with SMBD and FD parsing. FD parsing, of course, can only really work on the same node. So all the IP addresses that we are going to serve, they must absolutely exist on the same node in order to really work with multi-channel in the way that we have implemented it in Samba. And this is a big blocking issue. There are some workarounds you could that are also described on some wikis and even I think on the Red Hat portal, I think somewhere. You could just either not use public IP addresses at all and only use the statically local addresses of the nodes, or you would have individual etc CDB public addresses file per node and let CDB manage them. In either case, you would basically just really switch off the HA component by doing that. This is, of course, something which we can't accept as the long-term solution for shipping multi-channel then and enabling it in a global fashion. So we absolutely also need to have this neat automatic configuration, this transparent failover, just as it will happen on Windows. So before we can really declare this finished. So just briefly here, describing the steps, what will happen right now if you use a typical CDDB setup and the multi-channel, which it is implemented right now in Samba. So the client will just talk to the cluster. The cluster is just here represented by three nodes. Each node has three IP addresses. The Samba client, whatever, just does a lookup by DNS or something and lands on the first IP on the first node. It will then ask the server for the list of eligible interfaces for multi-channel processing. So there's an FSCTL query for that. I'm not going into big detail on that. The node will just correctly return the three interfaces it has. The client will then make some decisions based on whether it can group these interfaces. All these interfaces have either the same speed or have these RSS capability or other indications that make it really capable of doing SMB multi-channel. So that's all client-driven. That's not whatever the server is not. Server is just giving out the information. The client makes the decision and sets up the whole multi-channel setup. In this case now, the client would just connect, just in theory think these IP addresses would just be the same set of interfaces, equal interfaces. It would just set up a multi-channel connection with these three things, with these three channels. If you now envision that there you have a failure on the first IP address, on the first interface, CTDB will, in its default configuration, react on that. It will just move that IP address to another node and inform the client that this IP address has been moved and will issue a mechanism that lets that client reconnect to that particular new node. And voila, by that you already have destroyed your multi-channel setup in a really very, very bad fashion. And this really absolutely needs to be circumvented. So we need never really run into something like that. So there are a couple of technologies available, some already implemented, some upcoming, some are very new. So I mentioned some of that. First of all, we could just very, very basically say, okay, we monitor all the CDDB connect, we monitor all the interfaces on all the nodes, and if there is an outage on one of these interfaces, then we move the whole package to another node, and we just never allow individual connections or IP addresses being staying around at one node while the client would connect to another node. This would be a very drastic decision, but something that might be working. Then, of course, there's this witness interface, which the client is supposed to use for CA shares, that would also allow much more fine-grained failover, which the multi-channel setup would also take advantage of, I believe, although there's no protocol like deep relationship between these two things, as I've learned. But even with witness, we kind of have a prototype working, but we don't have it available right now. Yeah.
So it's really the question for Tom. So can we do, is multi-channel only available for CA shares or it is for all the shares?
It's for all the shares, I believe. Yeah.
But then witness only works if it is CA share.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we still have
actually, need. CA, there's a shared cap cluster that is
there.
So multi-channel is a core function of SMB3. It's available for all SMB connections when dialect 3 or above is negotiated. It's optional by the server what interfaces are returned. So the server can direct the client in certain ways, but it's always going to be part of the protocol. When the server is marked CA, it's global cap C, whatever it is, then the server be quote clustered. There's an actual per share attribute called share cap cluster that doesn't actually mean cluster. It means that the share supports witness notifications. Witness is a share behavior, not a server behavior. So it's only present on cluster type shares. So that implies that it's CA, but in particular, additionally cluster. So witness is really not as flexible. It's relevant here, but it's not something to depend on. It won't always be present, for instance. And the client isn't required to create a witness connection when he sees ShareCap cluster. He's told he can, but he doesn't have to. A lot of clients either don't have it configured or whatever, don't feel like doing it. They just ignore the bit, in other words.
Yeah. So apart from that, witness is not available right now in the Samba server or client, and also not in the Linux client, so that's another obstacle. But then there's also this SMB 3.1.1 tree connect context redirection, which could also be a technology used to redirect the client from early on, and you know, maybe then also that could be an instrument in order to circumvent these bad scenarios from happening. So there are some technologies on the table, some concepts, but we definitely need to spend a lot of more thinking about these things, because without really having a rock-solid solution for this particular problem, we can't ship multi-channel, at least not in the cluster. Yeah. So I guess in the next days, maybe tomorrow, we can have much more discussions about this, even more, and look into some things.
One thing to remember about the tree connect context.
It's it once again, it's optional. And once again, it's a property of the share, right? It happens after tree connect. It's not a server property. So this one's very similar, but this thing is inline to the SMB 3.1.1 dialect, right? There's no second protocol. So this one's a little more reliable, but it does require the client to have implemented the tree connect that is, you know, redirection aware. So there is another aspect of the client opting in. Not all clients support this.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry it's all so mysterious. But
I think that also we need to spend more time with really observing how Windows clusters behave and explore a bit more how they react to the scenarios like that. I mean,
you could take the approach of analyzing Windows clusters. Remember, Windows clients, there's nothing special about a Windows client. It's all in the cluster, right? And the cluster, you know, what it does is specific to the Windows implementation. You're not required to do what Windows does here, right? The protocol, and particularly the core multi-channel behavior, is probably enough to do what you want. And all SMB3 clients that I know of will query multi-channel somehow if they're able to do it. Right, the Linux client won't query it because it doesn't implement it yet, and so you have no hope of using that function with that client. But all Windows clients will do it, and it really doesn't matter. CA, cluster, tree connect, redirection—none of that matters. Multi-channel alone can probably do what you want. You may want to speak with the interop people about strategies here. Yep. There's a few different facets of the diamond that you could approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think that most of the logic just alone making the decisions about the proper selection of the channels is all embedded in the clients. So I think a lot of robustness might reside on the client already. But we definitely just need to have more testing here and more information. Yeah.
It's a little bit on the server too. And it's in the network because the client does routing lookups and tries to match types of interfaces, things like that. So it's a little complex.
Okay. Yeah.
Behavior though, right? Yeah. The protocol doesn't require anything to happen. It just allows the information to be exchanged. And, you know, the innovation is in how you use that information.
Okay. Yeah, so as I mentioned, there is not so much information which explores these overlap of these protocols. Multi-channel itself, of course, is well documented, and there are good TechNet articles about these things. But particularly about these failover problems, there is just no whatever, something like a spec, but obviously just way more behavior and also more freedom of the implementation that we can explore on. All right, so that's it. Any questions? You've got the mic.
I've got the mic. So what's your goal in all this? I mean, what are you really trying to do? Just implement multi-channel, or are you trying to improve the behavior of a Samba clustered server, or match one particular failure scenario?
First of all, we really need to be able to provide that feature because there's just been a strong demand. Just only in very simple setups, just single server, something like that. We need to be able to enable multi-channel. That's really important. And for clusters, we've got the same demand as well, and we need to be able to provide it in a rock-solid fashion. Although, of course, in a cluster with a clustered file system in the back, of course, we have completely different performance issues and things to address. So multi-channel wouldn't automatically help us in a fashion that maybe customers will expect it to be. But still, we need to provide this feature. Yeah, and we can't just switch it on. We need to really address these three things. We need to make it testable and solid for these least break retries and for the IP management with CDDB. Without that, we just can't ship it. Yeah. Martin?
Well, I guess if clustering is turned on and multi-channel is turned on, and a client asks for the list of things, you can only return one. I mean, it's not a useful implementation of the feature, but it's a working implementation.
Yep.
So.
Maybe I didn't quite understand that comment. All clients, all Microsoft clients, will query the multi-channel capability right after Tree Connect. That's just what they do. The Linux client doesn't.
And I think Martin said that we either enable clustering or multi-channel. So we just don't allow that you enable both things at the same time. So just in order to avoid this conflict.
Oh, I thought you were
just
proposing
as a short
dynamically
term.
Turning it on when the client asked.
Then when you ask for this, when a client asks for this interfaces, just return the interface that the client is connected over.
Just the one.
So you return the.
Yeah, you could return one interface. You might actually be able to just return an error.
Yeah.
You know, just an empty list.
Yeah.
The client knows he's already connected to one. He doesn't need to be told again.
Yeah. I was just thinking of returning a redundant response, and then the feature is implemented for non-clustered. And you clustering when as time
permits. Yeah.
It's a big win.
Yep.
I totally agree with you. It's a big win. The RSS alone is a big win.
Yep.
All modern NICs do it, and so you get much better interrupt spreading.
Right. Okay. Any other questions? If not, then yeah, thank you very much.